Today's podcast loaded with a ton of hoops. Tales from the Couch, we go over Miami's win, Utah's incredible comeback win against Cleveland. We're going to talk some Charlotte, Toronto, Orlando's win in Portland. Not as much on Golden State playing the backup Suns and getting smoked. We'll do that with KOC. Some of the second year guys, Wembanyama fits. I don't think we agree on that one all that much. And then life advice. So a lot of hoops. Enjoy.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply. This episode is brought to you by Arby's. $5 doesn't get you what it used to get you. I asked for change the other day. The guy gave me back $4. Introducing Arby's new 2 for $5 chicken wraps. In your choice of ranch, barbecue, honey mustard, and a bonus flavor called Incredible Value. Ever heard of it? You can't taste it, but boy, is it sweet. Arby's 2 for $5 chicken wraps are here for a limited time at participating locations. Visit an Arby's near you or order ahead on the Arby's app.
We start Wednesday's pod, Tales from the Couch. Okay, this really became a preference thing on what I wanted to focus in on here. It feels a little long in the beginning, but we'll keep it moving towards the end. A little zone fest for you early viewers. Yes, I start almost every day slash night, early evening with Detroit basketball. That was not going to happen last night. Down 40 to the Sixers. Congrats to the Sixers. Still like Diallo, though. Still like him. But Detroit was missing a few people last night. So, zone fest there. Toronto against Charlotte. Miami doing it against SGA early on there. So, let's dig into Charlotte at Toronto here for a bit. I don't know if there's much to talk about here with the Hornets. This could be an end-of-the-season wrap for me. LaMelo, I float between, wow, this guy's amazing. He's awesome. And then there's other nights where I'm like, what is he doing out there? Which is probably not fair to him still, because if there's one lesson that I keep reminding myself of now, it's that we've had these incredible development stories that have been pretty unprecedented throughout NBA history, to have players that, you know, look like they're going to be somebody, and then there's a step and it's like, okay, that's probably who they're going to be. And then there's this next step. It feels like it's happening more and more than I can ever remember in watching NBA basketball. But it also doesn't absolve anyone from getting off to a slow start, because then it kind of becomes this fan default defense of any player that you spend a high pick on, where you just point to everybody else that's gotten good later on. Like, if your guy in the lottery hasn't scored any points, you're like, well, look what Kawhi did early on. He was like, oh, cool. Now he just has to be a finals MVP in like 3 or 4 years. So both are worth reminding ourselves of, but at the same time, that defense can be a little different. But look, LaMelo's far further along than some of these other developmental guys that I'll talk about. But, you know, he has these stretches where I just don't know what it is that he's doing. In the third quarter, he hit 4 heat check threes in 3 minutes, like bombs. But then you look up the numbers and he's like 38, 39% from three, even though he's taking 11 a game right now, feels a little settle-ish. He's still at a really high number. So you can't knock him for taking those. I've always talked about his start stop with the ball in his hands. It's pretty incredible for somebody his size. He sees things other people don't see. He had Van Vliet on him. He went right past him, then froze the defenders like there were safeties, and he was a quarterback, froze him with his eyes, and then just dumped it off to a big. It's not like the team is great around him. You know, Mark Williams is finally starting to play a little bit, 9 games since Christmas. Hayward was out again last night. He's missed 21 of the 42 games. We know Rozier's pretty good. We know PJ's decent. Jalen McDaniels, I don't know. Really, it feels more like he's a Charlotte rotation player than an NBA rotation player. I know that he's built his defense. The handle's a little bit better than you would think. The shooting's dipped a bit, but I think he's 25 at the end of this month, which makes him a little bit older in the McDaniels that we get confused with that are in the league. And yeah, I already mentioned PJ and Rozier. The foul rate for LaMelo's up a bit more. He's fouled out of a few games. I don't know if that's that big of a deal. I think the weird thing is that he's so locked in and dynamic, and he keeps possessions alive later. He keeps his dribble alive later. He sees passes that other people usually don't see, And yet then on defense, he looks like a bored kid who's in a classroom who, you know, if it's not his turn, he's just not interested. He's flat-footed. That's what leads to the foul rates. He takes really bad risks. He gets out of position. He just kind of falls asleep all the time. You're like, what is going on? So I think when you're thinking about him as like the one, you're going, okay, what is he going to be? Because that's the standard that we're going to hold somebody who is drafted that high, you know, has these accolades early. But then you start to kind of get to that next phase of your career where it's like, okay, what are you going to be here? And at times it is so impressive. And other times I'm kind of confused about what it is and tempers maybe the ceiling expectation I have for him. So the reason I'm talking about him this much is they have the third best odds to win the lottery and land Victor Wembanyama. The LaMelo angle with Wembanyama is going to be, if they were to get the pick, everyone is going to, I would say there's a majority, maybe not everyone, is going to start to say like, wow, you know, think of the lobs, going to be said over and over again. This would probably be one of my least favorite destinations for him. The ownership is terrible. People don't say it nearly enough. Jordan's been a bad owner from the jump, and he just isn't a good one. So that wouldn't be great. And the rest of the roster, yeah, there's a little piece here, something I may like there. I know that from a talent standpoint, the Bridges issue isn't Charlotte's fault. So losing that for nothing is not ideal. But I feel like this is a real kind of stuck organization. And I guess you would argue, well, adding somebody like Victor as the number one pick like changes everything. And in a way that it does, there's just other teams where I think he has a better chance to succeed and be the best version of him. Even if the early part of that, if they were to win the lottery again, we're months and months away from even thinking about this, there's going to be, I think, an overwhelming like applause for it, because it would be, oh, these lobs. It's like, man, it's going to be a little bit more than just lobs from your one and center the entire time. On the Raptors side, they're 18-23 with this win. Only seven teams have a worse record than them. It was back and forth. They put up 72, I think, in the first half. You're always worried about their offense a little bit because they can feel a little, no, it's your turn, it's my turn, it's your turn, it's my turn, without much flow to it. This is not the case last night. They also hit 23s, which is season high from them. They went on a 14-zip run, tipped this game over. Van Vliet, a couple threes, who had been miserable from the floor. OG, a couple threes as well. So then Toronto scored some points there. But I started looking at the offense again. Overall, the offensive rating higher than you would think. There's just some issues when they've had some of these half-court numbers that are terrible. And this has been something that we've seen more from them in the past. But 15th overall, and then the last 15 games, they're 15th. So there you go. Nothing great. But the record's still always a little bit more surprising unless you're locked into the Raptors every single night. Okay, Oklahoma City at Miami. Who wants to watch some free throws? All right, so Miami went 40 of 40 from the free throw line last night. Is that a lot? Yes, it is. It's a new NBA record, breaking Utah's from 1982 when they went 39 from 39 from the free throw line. I thought Oklahoma City was going to win this one. Miami, by the way, without Bam, Hero, and Lowry, that's probably very familiar now for Heat fans, just looking at the lineup being like, who are we missing tonight? Once again, an incredible credit to the front office and Spoelstra to piece this thing together and do what they're doing. Because I think a lot of Heat fans, I think I have this right, I think they're only 15-13 with Butler in the lineup. But it looked like Oklahoma City was going to win this game. There's an SGA 3, Giddy baseline runner, and then there was this really nice play where, I credit Miami for this too. They just were like, screw this, let's sell out against SGA. They played some zone against them earlier. I didn't see it as much late. And then it turned into 4-on-3, and it's amazing because then you have Giddy initiating your offense 4-on-3 on the other side because they sold out with two against SGA. And then he makes what I thought was going to be the game-winning assist that led to his triple-double last night for Giddy, because so much of the defense focused on SGA. And they're like, somebody else go ahead and make a play here. And Giddy drives, reads it perfectly, little easy pass for him. But then that's not what happened, is it? Because Oladipo hits a three. His month has been really good. 16-4-4, 46% overall, 40% from three. He's hitting four free throws a game. He's 31 minutes per game in this stretch. I don't know if people, maybe it could sometimes be me where I'll think, wait, did I realize how few games Oladipo has played? And I know when you hear that, you're like, oh yeah, that's of course I have. Are you sure you truly know the extent of how limited he has been? So if you go back to a full season there, 19-20. God, let's look this up. So that Pacer season going into 17-18, when he played 75 games, he was incredible, like all NBA level. Made his first All-Star team. Got off to a really good start the next year as well. Played only 36 games in 18-19. In 19-20, he played 19 total games. In 2021, he played 33 games. 9 with the Pacers, 20 with Houston, 4 with Miami. Then he played in 8 total games last year in the regular season and only 16 games this season. I mean, it's been 17-18 with 3 different stops since he's played anything close to a full season. That's a lot of missed basketball. So he's been better. I know that everybody kind of looks at it as like at this turning the corner. I don't know that that's ever going to happen again. I just don't. God, that's a ton of missed time for somebody that was like really when it's his peak special when he was athletic. Okay, so he hits the 3 and then the game-winning play ends up being a Butler and 1, which you could see this coming a mile away. I mean, he looks for the contact first, is strong enough to then finish. He's hunting free throws, I think, more so than ever in his career, even though he's at 8.2 attempts per game. There's 2 other seasons where he actually took more free throws. There's other seasons where his free throw rate has actually been higher. His advanced stuff for this season is off the charts for Jimmy Butler. He's also missed 14 games, which I think for an older player, when you're missing 25% of the games, a lot of your efficiency stuff is going to be better because it's hard to play a full season. But this is the scouting report on him. You have to stay down. You have to stay down. You cannot put yourself in a situation to be compromised defensively where he initiates contact, because not only is he going to do it, he's also pretty good on the end-one stuff too. So that ended up being the game when he played. Miami wins this one. There you go. Okay, Cleveland at Utah. Jared Allen leaves this one, doesn't come back for the second half because of illness. Mitchell cooking, his 5th 40-point game of the season. I think he only has 14 for his career, so he has stepped it up here in Cleveland big time. I really feel like he and Garland play the perfect complementary, like high-usage guard stuff with each other. It's not necessarily the most fun for the bigs. I was tracking Mobley's touches in the last stretch of the rotation from the fourth quarter when he came back in, was in. He had like 1 design touch, maybe 2. There was a 4-on-3 where he made a great pass, and then there was another play where he kind of off a roll, he took a shot. But, you know, you're just not going to shoot it a lot as a big anymore in the NBA. But what you hope is that your guards don't screw each other up in the process, and they don't. And they're both incredible from 3, 40% from Mitchell, 39%. So basically, that, let me throw in a little Lamar Stevens love. I know he's not hitting enough shots for somebody that was such a big-time scorer at Penn State, but I think he's important because of his body type against Kevin Durant. Like, that'll be the assignment if this is a playoff matchup, because they don't really have the other wings that are big enough to compete because, you know, again, the guards are a little bit smaller, although Mitchell is stout and strong enough, and the wingspan is incredible. So Mitchell should have always been a better defender, and he has been more engaged with Cleveland. So that's kind of what you're looking at there. And then Jordan Clarkson happens. All right, just so we're clear on what happened last night. It's 1:22 left in the game. Cleveland is up 107-102. Clarkson hits a 3, lands forward on purpose, is given the free throw. All right, I still wish we could get rid of this stuff. I don't want to hear about landing area. When you land into the defender's landing area, that should be your fault, not the defender's. I mean, this thing's a fucking joke, and the league completely overreacted to the Zaza Kawhi thing, and now this is what we have, and we get to review it. So this whole thing takes a fucking week to sort out. He makes the free throw, so that's a 4-point play, but because it was ruled a flagrant, we're at 107-106, and they've got the ball. So then Clarkson gets fouled by LeVert because for whatever reason, Caris LeVert, even up 1 point with a minute left in the game, can't pay attention to what the hell's going on, lets himself get kind of caught up into Clarkson's back. He does touch him. I didn't love the call, but even worse, like, LeVert, what are you doing? You're just kind of getting lost in all the motion, and then you let yourself get caught in a spot where you're going to get called for a foul. So that's 3 shots. Clarkson, of course, makes all 3 of them. In 12 seconds, this goes from 107-102 Cleveland to 109-107. Clarkson hit just a nasty runner against Mobley later on to make it 111-107. So there you go. a win for Utah. But Utah, not sure if you know this, they're the 10th seed now. Since they were 10-4, 11-19 overall. Yes, Sexton has mixed some games, but still, you know, the Utah season playing out a lot more like we would think it would before the season got started. Okay, let's go now. I thought I was going to watch Golden State Phoenix, then I saw Phoenix's lineup, Ayton out, Chris Paul out. We know Booker's going to be out for a stretch. Both the Cams were out, but then with Steph Curry back, Wiggins back, Draymond back, Clay, who in his last six games has averaged 36 per. This was the Doc Rivers rule in full effect. Golden State was just getting run out of their own building. Somebody may have told his buddies, hey, check out the line for the live line in the second half because Phoenix doesn't have anybody and Golden State's just kind of stuck. Like, is this going to happen for 24 or more minutes? And then it did sort of. And then Golden State looked like they were going to come all the way back, kind of. And then they didn't. So there you go. Loser. Sorry I gave that one out, boys. You know who you are. Let's go to Orlando. 89-84 in the fourth quarter. Orlando's up on Portland. Portland's got a full squad there. There's always a little bit of a fight with me when I'm watching it going, all right, how are they going to use the guards? Because they had both Cole Anthony with Fultz in the game at the same time. Cole Anthony, solo drive. That was the last we kind of saw him. He's just going to have moments where he's going to decide, this is my turn, and there's always better options around him. It's not to say he's never supposed to shoot, but you get the point. I've probably mentioned this too many times before. All right, let's look at three specific plays for Orlando on offense late in this game where Franz Wagner basically sealed it for Orlando, even though, you know, there was still a chance there at the end. Okay, so Grant is assigned to Franz in this scenario. Eubanks is playing center because they wanted to go smaller in this one. And Nurkic also had foul trouble. Which is not new, but he had a good game otherwise. All right, so Grant is on Franz, and Eubanks is kind of in the drop role as the five here. So Eubanks is calling out defensively what they want to do, okay? And you've heard ice probably a million different times. Icing, although there are different variations, and I do not know all of them. In this scenario, the way they were running this high pick and roll, it would have been likely that they were trying to ice it and send it to the sideline. Right? Bring the big up, get this thing going in one direction, get it going towards the sideline. So there's really, we're only defending in one direction. You want to keep it away from the middle. Yes, I'm sure some of you who are more educated on it with the coaching backgrounds that you have would understand variations better than I would, or the terminology that would have to do with the variations. I'm just explaining this because Eubanks is screaming ice over and over and over again. And then Franz, there's no resistance around the screen, and drives right at Eubanks and finishes. It was like, whatever you guys were yelling, you definitely didn't do. So then they run just a straight switch to bring Eubanks out. And so now there's no call. It's just, we've made the straight switch, and is Franz going to drive here, and how are we going to help? Well, there was no help. Franz went right past Eubanks. Actually, to Eubanks' credit, got back into the play enough to contest the shot, but Franz made an insane reverse. Then Portland got a little caught up in kind of that scramble defensively where you know who your guy is, but you're too close to somebody else that matters. And that's what happened with Grant, is that he was near Paolo. And then he was kind of like, well, look, I'm on Paolo now. So then Franz is on the other side. They run a quick little switch. Lillard gets stuck with Franz. And Franz just decides, there's no way he's going to test my three. Hits a three right over him. That was three straight possessions where Franz had to read something different that they didn't do a good job with, then got the switch he wanted, just took it all on his own, and then saw another situation where he was like, I'm just going to take the three. The drives from Franz are relentless. His IQ is terrific. And yes, I'm with our guy Cerruti here. I don't think he gets enough love. Late though, Dame got Wendell Carter in a blow-by, which Wendell hadn't moved until Dame was about 10 feet away from him. And I think there were just little moments there with Dame going, you know, he still can pretty much get whatever he wants on offense, even if we had some concern about some of the shooting numbers there. That made it 107-103 on the drive. And then Lillard got fouled on another call where I was like, eh. You know, I really don't like some of this stuff, but Lillard gets the three free throws. So now we're talking about a one-point game, but it's under the shot clock. Fultz gets fouled. So it's 109-106. Your boy's on the couch. He's got the notepad ready. He can't wait to see what happens. And then we come back from, I think it was a Carl's Jr. ad, and the game was over. It was just over. Like, I never saw the possession until I watched it in the highlights this morning. So I had no idea what happened. And it's pretty crazy that I just got done talking about this. Yeah, it was Carl's Jr., that new A1 steak sauce burger. So picture me home. We go to ads. We come back. Burger time. And then all I see is 109-106 final. And everybody's walking off the court. That's what I got on my feed last night. I just did a rant on this. You can't have the Bowers play in the Peach Bowl. One of the biggest calls of the entire game. Was he out of bounds? Was it a first down? Is it a turnover on downs? Nope. Let's check in with Match.com and seven other ads. And then you come back and we don't know what's going on. You can't do that then. You can't do that last night. I didn't really spend a ton of time on the Clippers because I don't know. I get bored watching Dallas. I'm sorry. And they were down big. I know Doncic just got it going there in the fourth quarter. Kawhi had a season-high 33 points. The Clippers won a 21-15. They lost six straight, so it was good for them to get a win. In that stretch in the seven games, Kawhi played five. They went 1-4 in them. But if it would have been closer, you know, I was just watching it this morning as I was getting prepped and doing everything. So there you go. We got more NBA with KOC. Life advice at the end. Tales from the Couch. Tip off the NBA season with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. New customers get $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything from the money line to point scores to threes drained. Okay, favorite bets for the week. Let's just go rapid fire. Just lock it in. Look hard. Okay, what jumps out? Detroit missing dudes at home, +7 back-to-back. Down 40 to Philly last night. The highest total on the board is 238.5, San Antonio at Memphis. So let's go under Spurs at Grizzlies, 238.5. Both did not play last night. Phoenix, Denver, another overplay, potentially a total play here, 226.5. But remember what I talked about, second half. If you can find the second half line for Phoenix there, they're getting 13 back-to-back, winning without all their guys. This is the other really tough part about the NBA part of it. By the time this airs, you know, I don't even know what the lineups are going to be. So make sure you're up to date on the lineups for this NBA stuff as we start to get into the more silly part of the season. So yeah, we'll give out two totals here. We'll go under Spurs Grizzlies, 238.5. We'll go over, although, you know what, let's just keep them both unders. I'm sorry. I'm just going to expect Phoenix to fall off in the second half there after the back-to-back and then being in Denver. And that's why that number is so low to begin with. So let's play that number, but not the 13, not +13. So two totals for you. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with the same game parlay. FanDuel is also now live in Ohio, so make sure you get in on the action with great offers just for you now and throughout January. So don't miss your chance to get $150 in free bets with the promo code Ryan, R-Y-E-N. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NBA. Must be 21 and older in select states. First online real money wager. Only $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable free bets that expire 14 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply. All right, we'll keep the hoops going here. Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer. What's up, man? Good to see you.
Good to see you too, Ryan. How are you doing today?
Good. So, you know, when I was looking at the West, I felt like, are we going to have some defining tiers here where Denver, Memphis, and New Orleans are that first tier, all 2.5 games? And then there's that next group, Dallas. But then, like, when does that group end? And then when I look over at the East, it feels like the top teams are actually better. You know, Philadelphia just keeps rolling along here too with a good point differential. I like Cleveland. Like, the top five for the East feels pretty significant. But even if we looked at Boston's rough offensive stretch in December, trying to figure out the Rob Williams part of it, it feels like from a health standpoint, they're the best bet. I may not think they're like, I'm not looking at Boston saying, hey, they're clearly the best team. And maybe I don't even feel as good about them today as I did the first, I don't know, 25 games of the season. But from a health standpoint, knowing that their two guys play all the time, they seem like a better bet than the other contenders.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think their top end guys with Tatum and Brown, you know, Tatum, one of the 10 best players in all of the NBA, Jaylen Brown, one of the top 20, 25 best. And after that too, I mean, like there's certain teams where you lose one role player, it's dismantling to the system. With Boston, they have eight of the top 100, you know, in our Ringer rankings, we had eight Celtics when we revealed the rankings last month. Right now, I think, you know, White and Grant Williams fell off, but with Smart, Derek White, Al Horford, Malcolm Brogdon, Grant Williams, and obviously Robert Williams starting the other night for Boston. Once again, I mean, they have so much depth of talent as well, where even if one of those guys go down, they have other guys who can step up. So I think they're a safe bet in that sense, Ryan. I do think, though, compared to Milwaukee, though, like if Milwaukee were to get Chris Middleton back and totally healthy, I'd still give a slight edge to the Bucks over the Celtics if I'm picking a finals team because of the greatness of Giannis with how he works with, you know, Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton. And we saw Joe Ingles the other night have an outstanding performance for them off the bench, showing the importance of their shot creation there around Giannis. But ultimately, Boston is the safer bet, considering health and all the issues some of those other teams are having.
So Durant's out a month. We all kind of expect it to happen at some point. Is there now enough depth, though, for them to kind of ride this out way better than they did last year?
I think so. I mean, like, you know, Chris Vernon and I were talking about this week with Brooklyn. Like, all of our conversations this year, you know, it's about KD and the greatness of his play. But it's also about, you know, how all the pieces around him this year. Whereas last year, it wasn't as much about, you know, Nick Claxton being an all defensive candidate. You know, they recently get Harris and Curry back. Like, those guys can have an uptick. And I think the real important player for them without KD now is going to be TJ Warren. TJ Warren has been coming off their bench, occasionally staggering minutes between him and Kevin Durant. You know, he's a guy who can be a bucket getter for you, who can score close to 20 points per game. So I think with Brooklyn, they have enough. They have, it's like we just said with Boston, the Celtics have so much depth on their team that others can step up. With the Nets, like, obviously you're not going to be as good with Kevin Durant, a top five MVP candidate so far this season, an all D candidate in his own right, obviously, but they do have other guys who can, I think, collectively absorb some of that responsibility and help keep the team afloat in the top six in the Eastern Conference. I don't think I don't expect them to fall apart. In fact, I'd be shocked if they were to fall apart.
What would it take for you to go, okay, I actually like Philadelphia better than everybody in the East? Is that possible?
I think for me to like them more than anybody in the Eastern Conference, it's going to have to be James Harden and Tyrese Maxey even getting better together in that backcourt. I think with Maxey, like, as good as he is, he's still that upside piece for them where if he can tap into an even higher level as that third cog on that team, because we've seen Harden have moments where he still can tap into the old Harden and be obviously still an MVP candidate, but can Maxey step up even further with the current roster? And if it's not that, perhaps it's a trade that Daryl Morey might have up his sleeve to add one more wing in that rotation to help elevate them. But I'm high on Philly as is, you know, Ryan. I think they're right up there with Boston, Milwaukee with that group, you know, with Embiid and Harden playing at the level that they are. I just think it's on that backcourt to further elevate their play up to the level of Embiid.
Yeah, I feel guilty sometimes of them. They're kind of like Dallas for me, you know, where I feel guilty that I don't enjoy the peaks of it enough. And it's for different reasons, you know.
Harden?
It's the playoff resume stuff with the Phillies two main guys, you know, and then for Dallas, I'm just not a huge fan of as great as he is. Like, I don't think anyone has an easier time getting a bucket than Luka. Like, if you need a bucket in today's game, do you pick anyone over Luka?
Probably not right now. No.
Right?
His ability to create shots from anywhere on the floor.
Yeah. So here I'm giving him the ultimate compliment. But then when I think about, you know, watching them and when they have good runs and they turn their defense around yesterday and they make it to the Western Conference Finals, like I've already been over this before. It's just that you and I haven't talked about it. Like it's almost more guilt when I watch them where I just go, eh, okay. Like I got it. And with Philly, like Harden goes on this incredible tear. You know, they win games with some of those other dudes out. They're keeping pace somewhat at the top of the East. And it has more to do with, you know, the other teams being really good here. But with Philly, it's just, it would have to be like pristine for the regular season end and for me to not go like, okay, well, we'll see what happens. Not to say it's impossible, but no, it just, I'll watch him. I'll be like, hey, this is really good. It's fun. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe I should stop watching the regular season with so much emphasis on what I think it means in the playoffs.
Well, I mean, how much does depth matter here with what we're talking about? Because, you know, it seems like some of your concerns with Philly and Dallas are related to everybody else around Embiid and Harden and Maxey for Philly, and then everybody around Luka on the Dallas side of things. Like Grant Williams, you know, he's what, the seventh best player on the Celtics? He'd be the third best player on the Mavs behind Christian Wood and Luka. Like it's not even close.
I like Philly's depth a lot more than I like Dallas's depth. I don't think that's the
same for sure.
Right. Okay. In the West, if everybody were healthy, who would you actually like the most?
The Warriors. They can still spread out Jokic with five out in the postseason when they need to with that Denver roster. If the Warriors are totally healthy, I'm still going with them over everybody else. But, Ryan, I think with Denver, people talk about some of the concerns on the defense. Everything I just said there, spread them out, you know, five out, pull out Jokic away from the paint, you know, space them out. The one hesitation I have there with Denver is the fact that they have a lot of big defenders. Like, Michael Porter Jr. is not a great stopper, but he's 6'10". Aaron Gordon, Bruce Brown, they have a lot of size that they haven't had in past years. KCP, they can surround Jokic with a lot of big wing defenders who can provide help and still offer some interior rim protection. That's where I think the difference is with Denver this year compared to some past years. With that said, though, the Warriors still can tap into an elite level. Like their five-man lineup, their starting lineup is still one of the best in all of basketball. They just have to figure out some of those configurations at the wing spot. Maybe they need a move to help plug that hole, but I think when the Warriors go down to their eight-man playoff rotation, they're still the best in the West.
I think I like New Orleans the best.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Now you're talking my language though, Ryan. I said before the season, they can make the play. They can make the finals. Not that they will, that they can.
NBA finals?
The NBA finals, the Pelicans. And I said they can, not that they will. And the reason why I wouldn't say they will is because of the inexperience, but also the health. Like everything you just said about Boston being the best bet, doesn't that make New Orleans one of the worst bets, considering, you know, Zion and Ingram can't stay on the floor?
Yeah, they're probably the worst bet. But, you know, Denver, fairly clean bill of health, other than the Michael Porter Jr. part where he'll be hurt again. But mm-hmm. Murray definitely looks way better now, which is to be expected. Memphis has their own issues with maybe their top two guys. But I think with Ja, it's just always I'm afraid it's going to happen, not just because he missed time last year.
The way he plays, scary.
Right. And then the Pelicans, they're the worst bet out of all of it. I mean, Dallas is missing Finney Smith and Kleba is going to miss some time, continue to miss time. You know, they keep putting Josh Green in the update because he was one of the rotation guys. but I don't know if that means a ton. Sacramento's a better health bet. Even with Sabonis in this hand situation, there hasn't been much drop off. Clippers are the worst health bet. They're probably worse than the Pelicans. Phoenix is a mess. Golden State's had their issues. Minnesota's missing, their second best player. And then, you know, on and on and on. I mean, Portland's actually kind of relatively healthy for them right now. So I know this isn't exactly new, but I mean, it kind of gets back to the first part of the whole Boston thing where you're going through this. Like, I like what New Orleans is, but it's a worse bet than Denver to expect to know what you're going to get once April starts up. Like, there's no way I could be like, hey, it's New Orleans, it's everybody else, or hey, they're the favorites, because they're still more unknown, despite some of my concerns about, like, I just, sometimes I'll look at the Denver conversation and look at the wins, look at the one seed, and you're like, all right, but is this really who they're not a team that anybody's afraid of, right?
They should be. I mean, Jokic could be a three-time MVP, and he has a better supporting cast than he's had in past years. They should be feared. But I think, to your point with New Orleans, they're a team that should be feared if come April, Ingram and Zion are out there healthy, because they have the top end star talent. Like, they're almost kind of the West version, like a younger, inexperienced version of Boston. They have the top end talent, but they also have the depth too. I mean, like, Dyson Daniels as a rookie is already one of the better, you know, guard wing defenders in the league. Trey Murphy, that dude is a nasty shooter. He has a really good connection with Zion in the half court as well, with some of their two-man game stuff. They have lineup versatility. They can play big with Jonas Valanciunas. They can play small with Larry Nance, Zion front courts. You know, like, they have all these different ways that they can play and match up against different teams. So I think that's what you need. You know, when we talk about playoff basketball, we talk all the time about switchability and versatility from an individual player standpoint, but that's also true from a coaching standpoint when it comes to the types of lineups that you can put out there on the floor. That's the benefit Boston has had. You can put out Al Horford and Rob Williams, or you can just throw out Horford, or you can play small. That's what Golden State has tried to have, you know, with one big out there with Looney and Draymond, or just Draymond when they really want to go small. And New Orleans has that too, you know, as long as Zion is healthy. So, I mean, even the Clippers, that's why people hang on to the Clippers. Like, last night, you know, they win their game against Dallas going small. Zubats played 16 minutes. You know, they went with all wing lineups, and they defended Christian Wood with, you know, Marcus Morris, Covington, man, throughout the entire game, and it worked.
I'm having a hard time with the Clippers thing. Like, I just, how many years are you going to go, oh, well, if they're healthy, if they were to do this, I mean,
can't right. trust them.
Yeah. Like, there's still more trust with chronically injured teams that I would have, way more so than the Clippers. Like, I can't write them off in January, but like, I get sick of people telling me how it's like, man, if they're healthy and they're right, like, look out. Like, I don't know. Even with those two guys, it's not some guarantee.
Where are you at with Kawhi? I mean, like, he's putting up numbers lately, but I still don't feel like he has the same burst and like that explosiveness we saw in that Utah series a couple of years ago. Like, he doesn't, like, he's putting up numbers, but it just doesn't feel the same to me. Even last night,
I thought he was going to put up numbers if he was slower. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't, I wasn't shocked to see him put up numbers and look slower, but I agree with you. He's looked slower. I think he gets taken defensively way more than people ever attributed to him. Like, to me, the defensive part of him is way more reputation than what I really see at times. But because of his handle and his size and the way he's able to create space and the way he's able to shoot once he creates it, like, I expected him to, even a slower version of him, to be able to put up really big numbers. But even in this recent stretch, they get the win last night, but they played pretty poorly for 2 weeks. And that's with him back for, what, five of the seven games or four of the seven games? So, and then even like, what, they get blasted by Denver, blasted by him. You know, and those two guys were playing, and then you're like, oh, wait, since they only played so many minutes, are they going to play him tomorrow night? And you're like, nope. And they don't they don't play the next night. So I guess I'm not trying to be a dick about it with the Clippers. I'm just sick of hearing about it.
It's just hard to trust that team. And I think those games you're talking about last week, they get destroyed on Thursday night. I think Paul George and Kawhi played a combined 33 minutes and not playing the next night. It's games like that where you want to bounce back. And I mean, sure, you beat Dallas last night going small, you know, Ty Lue pulls out the all wing lineup even without Paul George. And like, that's probably the formula for them in a lot of postseason series. But, you know, Friday, I believe they face Denver. Like, those are the real tests, more so than Dallas and their lack of depth.
Yeah, it was interesting too during that Denver broadcast where Reggie Miller was saying that Ty Lue was basically expressing frustration that it's coaching with cue cards, where I thought, wait, that's kind of revealing. And I'd imagine everybody's frustrated. Like, I don't think anybody with the Clippers would listen to this and say any of this stuff is unfair, but
yeah,
they get this benefit of the doubt deal where, all right, I kind of get it, but, you know.
Why do they get that benefit of the doubt, you think?
I think it leads back to kind of the beginning of the year, too. Like, I'll never forget, there was the offseason where Ainge got Gordon Hayward and Kyrie. Oklahoma City got Paul George, but then at the very end, they got Melo. But at that point, the Melo thing was going to kind of mess him up more than it was going to help him, and then they moved on from that real quick. Remember that? And they did the GM poll, and they went through it, and they were like, who had the best offseason? Which GM had the best offseason? And Oklahoma City actually won it. And I thought, wait, Boston gets Kyrie and Gordon Hayward? And because the Melo thing happened more recently in combination with the Paul George thing, it was like a landslide that Presti wanted. And I went, man, this is weird. And I feel like the same thing happened to a lesser extent with the Clippers with the John Wall deal. Like, it's, oh, shit, they added John Wall? Like, that guy was the number one pick. And you're like, you know, I expect something from him, okay? I think a lot of teams would like to have him in the rotation. But it doesn't change the course of who you are. And then it was, oh, they're the deepest team. It's like, they're definitely not the deepest team. Even when they're healthy, they are not as deep as New Orleans. It's not even a debate.
They're probably deeper with okay talent, but not with like playoff rotation talent, which is the difference between New Orleans and the Clippers right now.
And like, Boston. Like,
yeah,
probably Boston too.
No doubt about it. I mean, that's kind of the thing with the Clippers. They have options on the bench. I mean, like, you know, Luke Kennard, John Wall, you know, these guys are solid players. But I don't think they're at the level of some of the other talent we're talking about on these other teams.
No, I guess it, maybe it's just my own personal frustration with them as a storyline. All right, little NBA high-low here. We're going to throw out a player and figure out who we like more or less after the person, okay? All right, so the player's LaMelo. The next player's Garland. Who would you rather have?
Can I just ask real quick, is this for today? Is going to win a game today or for, you know, the next 5-10 years?
I think it's long term. You know, I really think, to be fair here, I think this is about long term.
All right, LaMelo then. Just some more dynamic player than Garland. I love Garland. He's the better player today. But LaMelo Ball long term would be my bet. That dude has become one of the best shooters in all of basketball after pre-draft concerns about his shot translating. He's up to like 10, 11. Three-point attempts per game, ton of them, high degree of difficulty, and he's making a lot of them.
Yeah, he's 11 a game. And I'll admit, like I did at the top of the podcast, like sometimes I'm like, how are you taking this shot? And then you look at the number and you go, it goes in. It goes in enough where even if there's some bad decisions along the way, like when you're 39, 40%, it's hard to tell you to stop taking some of these, even though I wonder what his number would be if it was always within the flow. Because there's a lot of like 20, 19 second left in the shot clock, heat checks in there, which I'm like, did that? But the number's too good from three to really get on it. I would take Garland, but I don't think anybody else would. Okay, the next one in comparison to LaMelo is Poole.
Oh, LaMelo, not even a question.
No, and the Poole's like, I think 31% from three this year too. I was going to push the limits there. Okay, here we go. Karl Anthony Towns is the player. Here are the options. Julius Randle.
I mean, this is tough for me because I used to be a Cat guy. I've never been a Randle guy. But Randle, the last month or so, has been better than all NBA Randle. Like the year he won all NBA, this version of Julius Randle is even better. Pairing him with Jalen Brunson, their pick and roll chemistry. But I still have to go slight edge to Cat, just based off the history aspect. I don't want to go Cat, but I'll go with Karl Anthony Towns reluctantly.
Yeah, I think Towns is still the right answer here, but that was the whole point of this, is to make you go, what am I really going to pick, Julius Randle over Karl Anthony Towns?
Maybe you
Towns
do.
Towns is not a numbers thing for me at all. It isn't. I really worry about kind of long term how he fits in with a team, especially when he has the keys to the team. You know, I don't know.
Personality-wise?
Yeah.
A little mopey, not, huh?
No, I don't. Just think it always feels like there's a lot going on with Towns over the course of a game. And I don't know. I thought maybe I thought maybe he was a little happier last year for the first time in a while. So I was like, okay, maybe we can build on this. And I know he's gone through a ton of stuff too. But it was kind of happening before. But yeah, I think there's just a certain kind of mental DNA you have to have for some of this stuff. Okay. All right. So we both say Towns here still. Towns or Jared Allen?
I guess in some ways it depends on the type of team that you're building here. Jared Allen, the easier guy to plug in. Elite defender, you know, willing screener, always runs the floor even if he's not getting touches. Great finisher around the basket. Good connector as a passer. Can post up a little bit, you know, when he needs to against a smaller defender to seal someone off inside. Give me Jared Allen over Cat to build around for the next 5-10 years.
Yeah, I would agree there. I would agree. Offensively, there's no comparison to the talent that Towns has. But I kind of speaking on some of the talent stuff we've already covered here a little bit better. I just wonder if he's ever traded from Minnesota. I have no idea how bad this Minnesota thing is going to get. I wonder how they'll try to reset this on the fly, you know, get D'Angelo Russell the hell out of there. But
that should happen.
If they ever moved off of Towns, it'd be really interesting what the new fan base would be thinking they were getting. Like, they'd be going, oh my gosh, like, look at this guy. He's a center. He can shoot. He's one of the greatest shooting centers. I think, didn't he call himself one of the greatest centers of all time?
I think he said he is the greatest shooting center of all time.
There's some numbers that would tell you he's not wrong there. But
statistically, but you know, if we're factoring in longevity, you know, Dirk Nowitzki is still not matched.
Right.
We say Jared Allen over Towns. Does that mean Rudy Gobert over Towns?
No.
Why not?
I think it's kind of bad when he's on his second team and they don't want to pass to him. That should tell us something.
And he has one thing he lacks one thing that Jared Allen has, and that's the ability to dribble the ball.
Look, he doesn't have to be guarded, and the defensive numbers. I know there's been a little uptick here recently, but the defensive numbers, which were already declining towards the end of the Utah thing, which was a little scary, and then you compare it to the impact that he's made over the course of this season, it's not what you signed up. Even the worst version of Gobert, you didn't think you were going to get this. So I think that's a problem. Okay. We could probably do in a little aside here. Hollinger brought it up. I had touched on it a few times with Mobley, and it's not like this can be a compliment, right? When I think of Evan Mobley and how perfect a prospect he felt like he was coming out, and the only conversation between him and Cade was really like, okay, but in today's league, if you have a guy who initiates all the offense with the ball in his hands versus somebody else who's dependent on them getting them the ball, like, you take the guy that controls the basketball in today's game, right? Which is a massive departure from what we grew up with, because these guys just don't get the ball. They don't like to pass it to him. Forget Rudy Gobert. Plenty of bigs out there going, are you serious? Like, I'm never going to get the pass unless it's a lob off the fucking help on a pick and roll. So Mobley, who, when I went through and did all the USC stuff on him, I'm like, he doesn't make any mistakes. His passes are incredible. He's got some touch. He's 30%, but the free throw number's good. So I'd imagine he's going to be able to develop some of the shooting. So the expectation is that for him to be what a lot of us think he can be. I think you had a clip of him this morning defensively, what he did against Utah, which is just insane. And even though I think one of the two design touches he got in that game in the fourth quarter, he made a perfect read and kicked it to the corner. They missed a three. So like he makes the right decisions. But if he's a one and a transcendent franchise player, which is pretty lofty hope, but the fact that we'd even ask that about him, that he's even eligible for that kind of conversation, is a compliment to him in the beginning. But then when I watch with a more critical eye, I go, what is it that he does offensively? Where I'm like, that's the thing that's really, like, sure, the lobs are cool. There's a hook shot every now and then that shows up that looks really, really smooth. But it doesn't feel like there's any one thing to him consistently offensively, and the shooting numbers have been terrible, where I go, okay. And that's a problem for somebody that we project at the best case scenario could be beyond even a top 20 player in the NBA.
I don't see that in him. I always felt like it, like with Mobley, the bet on him was you're getting this guy who's an elite defensive presence, who's versatile, and he's a connector on offense with the playmaking that you're talking about. Like, he's not a primary initiator, but he's a connector. You know, he can grab a defensive board, you know, dribble up the floor, make the
great
correct
word
pass,
for it. Right. Right. Yeah, because because he's willing too on top of everything else. And he sees some stuff as a big guy that's really impressive as a passer. So go ahead. Sorry.
For sure. And like, I think that's the value in him growing into that. For him, like, what needs to happen for him to become a, you know, a, like you said, beyond a top 20 player, a primary on your team, the go-to option? Like, his shot from three has not yet to develop. You know, the shot off the dribble has not yet to develop. And that's really the separating skill for any player that's a big man, is the ability to do wing-like or guard-like things on the floor as a dribble jumper shooter or attacking the basket. And he hasn't shown that ability yet at a high level. So unless that develops at some point throughout his career, he's still young, obviously, in his second year, that is not going to be part of his game. It's going to be him enhancing the star on the team like he is right now with Mitchell and Garland, you know, providing, you know, what he does on offense as a connector and being a supportive piece, a lockdown interior guy who can also switch on the perimeter. Like, I think I'm not worried about him in that sense, but maybe for Cavs fans who had the expectation that it'd become Kevin Garnett. Yeah. Like, I think you're probably disappointed, but maybe that was a bit unfair to expect from him in the first place.
Yeah. The KG, the Tim Duncan stuff, I think we can put that to bed.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Which is okay if you're not one of those two guys, because they are two of the, I mean,
top 10, 20 right. greatest Duncan's players ever. Yeah.
Top 10. If KG wanted to shoot more, he would have been top 10.
Oh, yeah.
He actually just didn't really have a ton of interest. Despite it felt like every time he got a good look, it was the right thing for him to do, and he would still pass out of it a ton. That kind of led to the rest of the stuff, because Hollinger was really good on this. Like, Scotty Barnes, wow, what could this guy become? And I think this year, the disappointment is only based on this unlimited ceiling for him. This hybrid 1 through 5 do everything. The shooting's still a problem. It's been a problem for his entire career. And I know Toronto has some really bad, I think you go, now I go habit to him, where there's a lot of guys that want to eat there that are all pretty good offensive players. Even though some of the offensive numbers, you know, like, they'll go through these stretches, man, where I just feel like I hate them on offense. The numbers will actually still be a little bit better than I would expect them to be. But there's the Barnes thing, the Jalen Green thing. I mean, again, I covered this all last week, so I just want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think with Barnes, I mean, he's been a little bit better recently on offense. You know, defense is giving him kind of the Ben Simmons treatment, sagging off him. Like, in that game you mentioned, you watched Charlotte last night, there was this one play, Plumlee, you know, started out defending Barnes on the perimeter and then deliberately sagged off of Barnes, but Barnes drove right into him anyway and spun into a layup. And granted, you know, Plumlee's not the toughest matchup. I think Barnes has done a bit of a better job, you know, drawing those defenders, kicking out and then sending a screen or taking a short pull-up jumper. He's dribbling into that space that defenses are providing. For me, like, I think defensively is where I'm disappointed with him. Like, this year, the effort has been poor. It's been inconsistent. He's had some, he still has good moments as a help defender, you know, with his size and length as a help defender inside, but man to man on the perimeter. I was looking at the Second Spectrum numbers recently. I believe he's third in the NBA. They track blow-bys, which is when the offensive player drives right by the opposing defender. And he's third in the NBA in allowing blow-bys behind Luka and his teammate Fred VanVleet. Like, he just isn't able to keep in front of some of the quicker players in the league, which is what he needs to do to reach his defensive potential as a player. So I'm disappointed in the progress by him. I'm not out on him by any means. But perhaps it's also time to recalibrate on what his upside is as a player when you're talking about building a franchise around him. Maybe Toronto actually made a mistake not more strongly considering the Kevin Durant option during the offseason.
Yeah, it seems, and even at the time when you're like, you won't trade Scotty Barnes in a deal for Kevin Durant, but then when you go, Durant's 34, is he going to like Toronto? He's probably going to get hurt again. He just got hurt again.
Mm-hmm.
The Durant trade wasn't just about, you know, the talent part of it. Even if I'm with you, where sometimes we hear about these trade rumors and then what a team won't give up, and you just have to laugh. You're like, do you not realize the other guy that you're getting here? Like, or this idea, you know, because I think we're so conditioned to think that now when you trade for somebody, you don't give up your good player, right? You're like, here's the cap filler, and here are the 5 picks and the 2 swaps, and then we get your guy. But the Durant thing was never going to be easy for Toronto. I know everybody kind of looks at Toronto as like the team that everybody, you know, Messiah. He's just really good at this, man. I know he's been rumored to supposedly leave and take over these other teams and have bigger roles somewhere else. I mean, the Messiah rumors have gone on forever. He's just terrific. I mean, Precious got it going a little bit again last night. He's healthy again. Even Koloko, who I kind of liked out of Arizona. I'm like, there's more to this guy. And he's had flashes. And I know it's like a weirdly put together team. They've got a Van Vliet decision on all this stuff. I don't know how aggressive they could be. I mean, there's pieces that other teams like, but I don't know what the play would be there. Like, would they have enough for the next mad star? Would they do it? I mean, they did it in the past for Kawhi, but they ultimately didn't really give up. Like, that Kawhi trade was the last trade before all the trades that led to all the picks. Like, if the Kawhi trade happens a year and a half later, San Antonio's still eating off of Toronto picks, but that just wasn't the price back then.
Yeah, I mean, it was just really a perfect storm for them to get Kawhi for the price that they did. I mean, and they got Danny Green in the deal, too. It wasn't just Kawhi. They got a really good role player for just DeMar DeRozan and Jakob Poeltl. That's it. That's all they gave up. And I think most teams, like, that was the last non-pick trade. The Spurs could have went for options with more picks-based package at the time. They just wanted to keep winning and competing for the playoffs, so they got DeRozan. But if it were a different organization, maybe Toronto never even has a chance to land Kawhi Leonard, or maybe they're forced to have to give up picks if that situation were far different at the time.
Okay, anything on Jalen Green? Because I'm with you. It just feels like recalibrated ceilings. That's all the segment is.
I still really like Jalen Green. I think that, I mean, it goes without saying that situation in Houston is an absolute mess. Like you said, Toronto has habits of your turn, my turn. Houston is always your turn, my turn. It's disgusting.
Always. Or it's not your turn. That's my other one.
Yes.
Definitely not your turn.
It's definitely not your turn. Yeah. And that's often the case there. But with Jalen Green, some of the highs, Ryan, like the 34 point game he had against Orlando,
the Boston game. I had a couple friends go, wait, you don't think this guy's going to be running the league? I'm like, well, running the league is pretty lofty, but if you only, like a lot of Boston fans, only watch the Boston teams, you're going, this guy, like the shit he was doing in that game was, Gorman was losing his mind.
He is an amazing athlete. He moves so fluidly. I just worry about some of the bad habits that he's building. And that's like the opposite of his G League situation, where in the G League, we saw him get better as a playmaker over the course of the year, started making quicker, smarter decisions out of the pick and roll. And now he's in the it's not your turn situation with the Rockets, where, like, I think it's on that front office to fix the culture of the team over this coming year. You know, this before the deadline, during this offseason, and who they end up getting in the draft is going to be a real critical part in shaping that culture. But I still like Jalen Green as an individual player, and I like some of the other players on the team. Like, Shengun's really good. I think, like, Jabari Smith is going to work out long term. I think they have the pieces to build something that works together. It's just they need to remove some parts and add some other good culture pieces into it.
Okay, let's finish here then. Wembanyama, where would you most want to see him land?
Oh, New Orleans for the comedy. That's why. I mean, that's the main reason. And also for basketball reasons, it would be so sick to watch that. I guess out of the tanking team, so Houston, Detroit, Charlotte, San Antonio, and we'll throw Orlando into that too.
Orlando still has, fifth best odds.
They don't belong in tanking. They're not one of the four worst teams. We'll throw them in for the sake of conversation. I'd like to see him land with Houston, to be honest with you. I just think I love the fit with Şengün in that front court, with Jabari Smith, with the lineup versatility that they would have. If you pull out Şengün, a Jabari Smith, Victor Wembanyama front court, I think it really helped that team. I wanted to mention Orlando just because I think, like, what they're building right now with Wagner and Banchero and Bol Bol and all of their length and versatility with perimeter skill, adding Wembanyama to that, they could put out lineups with the smallest guys, Franz Wagner, and still have playmaking skill out there. I mean, it'd just be exciting to watch how they could build that out over the course of time.
What I like about Orlando's core guys here,
And I'm basically focusing on Franz and Paolo. And I think Suggs is showing some improvement here that gives you hope for when he comes back. And Wendell plays into it too as well, is that I think they're all willing teammates, which you don't see. They're kind of opposite Houston that way, where, I mean, Şengün doesn't have a choice. I think he's a really willing passer, but I mean, he's a post kid in today's NBA. You're just like, good luck, dude. Like, I know you have all these moves, but just, you don't, your kind doesn't get the ball anymore. Sorry. So I think from a basketball standpoint, it would like ease it really well for him. I think people are going to say San Antonio because it's such a solid history. To me, it doesn't make a ton of sense because I think the team's going to be pretty bad for a while, even though I really like Keldon and Vassell's played a lot better, but he's going to be out for the rest of the year, so they're going for it. I mean, the Thunder point differential alone, like, it's so incredible how competitive that team is, even though they're kind of on the fly with some of the lineup stuff there. So I guess Orlando kind of feels like the favorite. The Lakers part of that, if it ends up with New Orleans, is just haunting. You have a big smile on your face. Maybe I might not be as evil as you and Bill are about it, so I don't think I'll pick them.
It would just be a comical end to that saga if Victor Wembanyama were to land in New Orleans.
Okay, but when you continue to evaluate him for the draft stuff that you do at the Ringer, is there any minor concern about how much will he be allowed to initiate offensively? Like, I know what he's capable of, and he shows all these incredible things, but the thing, whenever I hear somebody say, like, he's a better prospect than LeBron, he may be more interesting, but he isn't, because LeBron from day one could run a basketball team and get his while also getting it going for his teammate. That Cleveland team, I think, went from 17 wins to 35 to 42, didn't make the playoffs. Then it was like, oh, can this guy even, you know, it's like he's going to be the NBA finals every year for a decade, folks. Don't worry about it. But as strange as the entire game is and what he's capable of doing that LeBron wasn't capable of doing, he's not the same prospect because there's no health concern with LeBron. And there's, I would imagine, some limitation on what Victor's going to be allowed to do from day one with the ball in his hands. Like, do you see him at year five having the ball in his hands, making all the decisions, which is what is reserved for the best players in the game?
Maybe. I think that's why LeBron is a better prospect, right? Like, from LeBron, it was a guarantee that he would have that ability in his game. With Wembanyama, it's a maybe. Like, I think with some of his shot selection, that's him being empowered to take some of those tough shots. You'd probably see the numbers improve if he were forced to be more, you know, pick and choosy with the decisions that he's making on the floor, which I think he would be. You know, if he's drafted to a team and they say, hey, you're not taking these, you know, 5-6 dribbles and then a contested pull up, you're not going to do that. We need you at the elbows running dribble handoffs and handing the ball off to this knockdown shooter on our team. You know, you got to give the ball to Jalen Green. You got to give the ball to whoever it might be, right? I think he's capable of doing that and has a willingness to do that. The primary initiation, like him bringing the ball up the floor, initiating your offense, like, you know, not with the passing, you know, brilliance of a Jokic, but more like a Sabonis type. Maybe he can grow into that long term where you see that. Because he does make some of those real nifty, you know, passes. He has vision. He has a will to make the extra pass, play good to great. So I think long term that's there. Where I guess my, when you talk about his upside, where my concern is people often compare him to Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is one of the greatest shooters in the history of basketball. Like, that guy's shooting 60% from mid-range this year. And to compare Wembanyama to KD is really unfair, considering the fact that he is only just now becoming a below average shooter. He's shooting 30% from three this year. He's shooting only like 34% on spot ups. I believe like 25% off the dribble. It's a lot of tough shots, but he's only for the first time become 70%+ from the free throw line. Like, it's with him, I wonder, what is the actual ceiling with his jump shot? Is he going to keep trending up as he has for 2, 3, 4 years straight now, which is, it's encouraging to see the progress. He works his ass off. But does he become a 37% three-point shooter off the catch? Does he become a 34% three-point shooter off the catch? And how good does he become off the dribble? Those are the questions that I have with how good is his shot And how much is that going to be something that draws the defense out and makes him even more of a threat to attack the basket, which he doesn't do enough of right now. He settles a lot outside. So it's shot selection, but also shooting efficiency, where like that's my number one nitpick with him, is what level does that reach for him to become, you know, the guy on your team at a total elite level?
Last one, Mobley or Banchero?
Banchero. Little edge. I just think the scoring outweighs the defense that Mobley provides. That's super close, though. Different apples and oranges right there.
Paolo or Anthony Edwards?
Paolo.
Wow.
I really like Paolo.
Hey, I do too.
Yeah. But Ant's really good, though. And he's still... I don't know. That's tough. That's really tough with those two.
The Paolo Mobley one, I agree with you on emphatically. Mm-hmm. Like I just do, even though I'd love to have Mobley on my team. I'd love to have him. But there's just some shit to Paolo, which I'll never forget, like going over it and over it and over again. And that was Mike Miller. I was hanging out with him. He's his agent. It wasn't what flipped me, because I was having a hard time figuring out who I ultimately was going to land on with number one between the three guys. And then I remember just talking with Mike, and he's like, man, he's like, he's got some shit to him, though, yeah. Ryan. He's got some shit to him. And I was like, is he selling me? Is he trying to sell me on this? And he was right. He didn't lie. He didn't lie. Because mm-hmm. when you think of the other two compared to Paolo, but, you know, Chet's easy to forget in all this conversation. I'm sure, like you, there's a lot of teams I talked with who were like, he is so good. They were like, stop making this complicated. The people that had Chet won. But we've now at least seen the Paolo part of this in the NBA, where there's just a fearlessness, but yet a not always forced fearlessness from him, which I think is an incredibly rare combination for a guy who could probably get more shots up, force the issue a little bit because of his athletic and size advantage that he has every single night, but he's still willing. And that's what I loved about him at Duke. It's what, you know, makes me love him now, and why the over Anthony Edwards answer may not be wrong, but I have a harder time with that one than Mobley.
Yeah, I mean, Big Carroll, it's 6'10". 6'10 with his size, athleticism, fluidity. Like it's really rare. I mean, who else is even in that category? LeBron?
Yeah. I mean, you know.
You're not comparing the two, you know, but strictly about, you know, having that size and strength, you know, the bulk with the speed. There's not a lot of guys that can do the things Banchero does on the floor. And plus, like you said, you know, he can pass too. He doesn't force things. He can be a playmaker if needed. And I mean, long term, it'll be interesting to see what he turns into defensively, too, because he can move when he wants to lock in. Like, I think he could become one of those super versatile defenders in a playoff situation for the Magic sometime down the line. Like, imagine having to go against that lineup, Franz Wagner, Paolo Banchero, having to stop those guys and score against them.
Bull,
baby.
Killing you in the corner. Okay, that was awesome. KOC with Chris Vernon, Tuesdays, Fridays. Also catch him on the Ringer NBA Draft Show, on all of his stuff, theringer.com. So the mismatch with Vernon. Let me know. I'll be happy to jump on with you guys.
Appreciate it, Ryan. Have a good day.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. La Quinta by Wyndham has everything you need for your next business trip. From free high-speed Wi-Fi to fitness centers to free bright side breakfast with fresh waffles, eggs, and more, book direct at LQ.com. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. This episode is brought to you by Arby's. You know what I hate, is after lunch, there's all this time before dinner. I hate it. So I'm always like, do I do this? It's like, you should. Gain season? Throw in a little something extra, an appetizer that just starts hours before dinner. It just gets so frustrating when there aren't great options. That's where Arby's new 2-for-$5 chicken wraps come in. Available in your choice of ranch, barbecue, and honey mustard. They're perfect for that afternoon snack attack or as an add-on to your meal. Food buddies. Arby's 2-for-$5 chicken wraps are here for a limited time at participating locations. Visit an Arby's near you or order ahead on the Arby's app.
You want details? Fine. I drive a Ferrari 355 Cabriolet.
What's up?
I have a ridiculous house in the South Fork. I have every toy you can possibly imagine. And best of all, kids, I am liquid. So, now you know what's possible. Let me tell you what's required.
Life advice. The email address is lifeadvicerr@gmail.com. Checking in with Kyle. What's up, man?
Just doing my best. Yesterday was pretty hard, but still strong. So I did have crazy dreams, like people said. The other night was about the worst night of sleep I've ever had. A lot of guns involved in my dreams. Like, I woke up a lot. So I think I'll be taking off the patch before I go to bed. Went to Frolic yesterday. Started immediately bargaining with myself and were like, well, maybe if I just leave a pack of cigarettes behind the bar. And, you know, but I didn't do it. So dug up an old Juul from like 2 years ago. Still think that's disgusting. So I don't know. It's been rough, but I'm still, if I'm your hero, because I got a lot of nice tweets of support and whatever. So I'm still here 3 days in.
Yeah, it appears a lot of nice emails as well. So how many beers did you have?
Like six, probably.
And you didn't smoke.
I know. Well, by five, I was like, well, what about that drawer? Could I put him in there? And the you know, my buddy was like, I guess if you want to, man, it kind of defeats the purpose. So I was like, well, if I just come here to smoke. So by beers like five or six, I'm like starting to think of ways I could get around this. And like, oh, I'll only smoke when I drink and I'll only smoke here. But I don't know. Hopefully I stay strong and don't do that.
Stay strong, buddy. Stay strong.
By beer six, it did sound like a pretty good concession, but I'm still.
Oh, yeah. I'm still. All right. Here we go. Big fan, 25, 6'1", 220, should be 200. Okay. This took place New Year's Eve, but it's still bothering me. My girlfriend and I were invited out with a friend of mine, let's call him Mark, and his wife to the New Year's Eve event. The event was scheduled to be from 9:30 to 1 and was said to include an unlimited buffet, two free drinks, champagne, and dessert at midnight, a DJ, and live music.
I've been to those.
Yeah, the dessert promise makes me think the whole thing's fraudulent. You know, like, how locked in is your staff going to be where we're doing unlimited buffet, two free drinks, champagne, and dessert? Like, is the dessert really going to be at midnight? You guys have your shit tight like that?
People are standing at midnight. They're not sitting down.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, you'd be sitting there with a fucking piece of tiramisu going, man, they really nailed this whole event. The total cost is kind of pricey, but that's to be expected for New Year's Eve. Mark offered to prepay for the event. We pay him back at the end of the night. Mark also invited another friend. I hope these names are changed here. Ugh. All right. Yeah. He said, let's call him Mark. Because, right. You know, we had one last week where, now looking back on it, it was way too harsh to include names and locations. And that's, I don't love that the emailer did it. And then it turned into like her husband had trying to be getting that email through. And what I don't necessarily like, it's happened a few times. I think it's kind of funny with the boyfriend stuff, but you know, this isn't a public service. We're just going to call out people for you. So I'll clean them up more on my own. If I should have done it with that one. So it was just too much. And I should have been. I've been doing this long enough.
That's been wiped, by the way. It's gone. So, like, tighten your shit up, or you might lose your life advice. So, it might just go away if somebody requests it, apparently. So, that one's gone.
No, just looking back on it. And then when I found that the husband had also sent in the email, and then it was like, okay, so the wife was going to get involved, but I didn't know. You know what I mean? Like, I don't remember every single email. Exactly. I didn't even see them all. You know what I mean? So, reading back on it, because it was pretty specific, I was like, you know what? We didn't need to do that. Okay, so back to this one. He said the other guy's name. Let's call him Mark. So it appears he's changing this one too. This one's not like the other one. So he goes, the other friend, Jake, and his wife, we never met. They'll come into play later. We get there, immediately realize it was a mistake. The event was poorly planned. There were too many people, not enough food. The staff couldn't keep up with the demand. We barely ate anything because there was nothing to eat. We never got our free drinks. The DJ was awful, and the live music was a single violinist. Okay, this is not a great night.
A single violinist.
Yeah. I think I went to that pizza place. Was this in Mexico City? The queso pizza?
Right.
Oh, was that gross. Mark felt bad, started ordering top shelf bottles for the table to enhance the vibes.
Oh, I know what's going to happen here.
Well, that's pretty expensive. Just ordering a top shelf bottle, like you're at least $500 in per bottle. Yeah. So, all right. About 11, Mark's son at home with a babysitter had a medical emergency and Mark had to go home. This left us with a couple we had never met. We ended up going home before midnight, nauseous and hungry. Well, how do you know they didn't serve the dessert? You weren't even, you weren't even there then. Okay. So you're out pre-midnight Of course, as expected, on Monday, I get a text from Mark. Here's your total. I totally understand where he's coming from. He had prepaid it. It wasn't his fault. Everything sucked. And his night was worse than mine. I obviously paid him in full. Fast forward to Friday, I get a text from Jake, who I just met that night. Since everyone left early, I was left with a bill for drinks. Here's what you owe me. I never asked for those drinks to be ordered. And I think I may have had a single shot of tequila. It's not Jake's fault, and he shouldn't have to pay for me. It's Mark's fault. So I felt like I have to pay him also. Overall, I'm willing to just chalk it up to a shitty night, but a $500 shitty night really isn't sitting right with me. I work in sports, not exactly making bank. Your career conversation in the pod are big motivator for me. Thanks. Yeah, no problem. Totally get it. 500 stings like fucking crazy. That's why you're still upset. That's why you're emailing us. He continues and finishes. I'm upset with Mark. You can't really say anything. If I called the restaurant to complain, they'd have no idea who I am as my name wasn't on the reservation. They'd also tell you to go fuck off super quick.
Yes.
Like, I don't even know what your argument is. I didn't really drink that much, so my tab shouldn't have been that much. You guys, yeah, I mean, I guess if he's getting back and wants to fight him on, hey, that thing wasn't even close to what you billed. It sucked. They knew it wasn't going to be a good night. They knew it wasn't. They were selling tickets to people that didn't have other plans, and they're taking advantage of you. You know, they probably had better ideas, but, you know, sounds a bit fire festy. So yes. I'm not sure they thought it was going to be that great of a night. So I get your point, right? But if you're not on the reservation, then, you know, what are they really going to do? Give you a discount to their Easter
next
fest?
Time?
Yeah.
St. Patty's Day with the corned beef roast.
Right. Probably a better drinking day than Easter. Great call.
Unlimited Kyle. Cabbage.
I'm not sure what I should do about this, if anything. If there any way for me to feel better about it, should I do anything or just move on and get over it? And what do I do next time Mark asks to go out? He's already done the got to do this right the next time text. Hey, look, Mark tried to make a play. I don't know. What's his resume on this? Is he always a bad planner? Well, then you got to tell Mark to stop planning shit or you can take it over. It's a shitty night for everybody involved, but you really don't have much recourse. Like, no one's to blame and everyone's to blame, right? Nothing is on my horizon except everything. Everything is on my horizon. So with this one, like, we've all been there, man. Like, the shit will happen. Well, the only thing that I don't quite understand was why was Mark ordering high-end bottles and then leaving? And then when you left, you didn't offer up anything to Jake that was still there? So he's thinking, wait, this guy's going to leave and didn't offer me any money? Like, everybody's thinking everyone involved is complicit, and so therefore everyone's going to square it up a little bit later on. I honestly think you kicking in was the right thing to do,
right?
Even if that money part of it sucks. And look, I don't want to sound dismissive about the money thing at all. I don't, because I also have done all of these things and done plenty of them wrong, and it's just kind of, you know, like we've said a few times, you're chalking this one up to the game. And the game is that sometimes you go out, and especially if you allow yourself to be taken advantage of on some of these New Year's Eve deals that are going to suck. You don't know anybody. It's a place you've never been. No one else is, like, I don't know where the fuck Mark ran into this whole circus. But, you know, this is stuff that happens. It's stuff that happens. We'll get all these emails about it. Like, what should I do? Or what should I do? Did you think you were going to skate through life in the social world of not having a night where you got fucked over on a tab? Like, you could stay in for the rest of your life and it'll never happen. I can guarantee it. You'll never have an awkward, hey, I only had an app and this, and I don't even know that person. And why was this person drinking top shelf Coke? Like, you want to avoid it for the rest of your life? Never do anything. There you go. Problem solved. But that's not much fun. Most of us want to do things, not never do anything ever again. So I think you chalk this one up to the game and the vulnerability of a night like New Year's Eve. And I know that 500 blows, but it also blows for Mark because he had to pay money too, even though it was his fault for setting this up. It also blows for this Jake guy who was getting stuck with all the bottle service.
Yeah.
And then everybody left early. So, like, did everybody think he was just going to pay for it all? Like, and again, when you order a bottle to the table and you drink some of it, there's no standard where I've ever heard, like,
I had a third of this bottle, yeah, not a half.
You had six drinks. I had two. So let's figure out the math. Like, I don't know. This is just a tale as old as time. It's happened. It's going to happen again. It's unavoidable. It's you just hope it doesn't happen that often. Sorry, dude.
Yeah, I think New Year's is one of those things, especially one of those all-inclusive. It's like, New Year's is also one of those nights where, like, I wouldn't be surprised if I woke up Monday and was like, wow, it was $300, huh? All right. didn't feel like a $300 night, but I guess that's what happened. So I do think 500 is a lot. I think you could maybe chalk it up to Mark, like, that my kid's got a problem, I got to get out of here. I mean, maybe he just couldn't wait for the waiter to come around to be like, hey, could you put, maybe he didn't have cash and maybe he had to run his card or something. I don't know. I mean, I think Mark thought he did the right thing by leaving and not stopping everyone else's night, because if that sounds like Mark might be the money guy in this friendship. He was like, oh, forget it. Like, sort of like the guy who puts the Airbnb on his credit card and we'll figure it out later. Because there's a couple guys in that group that are like, my credit card won't even allow me to book a 5 days worth of an Airbnb. So maybe Mark's the money guy and he didn't think as much of money as you did. And it's just sort of like, because he probably just didn't think it was such a big deal and we could figure this out later. Is what I mean. Because if he's got to leave at like 11 and you guys are planning on staying till 12:31, he was probably like, I have to go now. I've got a bit of a family emergency. I can't really end your guys' night by getting the waiter to come in and do tabs at 11 o'clock. And we'll just figure this out later. That's what I think. It probably wasn't as big a deal to Mark as it is to you. And I'm sure Mark got that text as well. So I think everybody lost in the end. I think for the Jake guy, probably a shitty way to end his New Year's. Your next day was not as good. But yeah, everyone had a shitty time. And this is why you don't do shit like this for New Year's. I'm a house party guy. We're a regular bar guy.
Yeah, have a plan where there's at least something that's established in the place you already know to avoid this. But I went back and read this line again. Mark felt bad, started ordering top shelf bottles for the table to enhance the vibes. The vibes are never free, man.
Yeah.
They're never free for the men. All right. They're usually free for the female guests.
Women.
Men have been paying for vibes for years, for decades, generations. I don't understand why Mark felt like he was going to order top shelf stuff. He was going to leave early. And then you thought you were going to leave early. Hey, do we even know if his kid was sick? Or did he go, the vibes suck so bad?
Is this a curb situation?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Do you get some kind of medical proof? Do you still want to be friends with Mark is my question. If you do, let this one go. And, Jake probably thinks you guys suck.
Yeah, I say don't go anywhere. You need to buy a ticket.
I have to know, did Mark order top shelf bottles and then left, and then you left, and then Jake was still sitting there? And because he drank them, I don't know, did he drink them all, and then you guys drank none, and then he hit you up with the bill? I don't know, man. Everybody's kind of guilty, but no one's to blame. How about that? I've said everybody's to blame, but no one is. That's just, all right, we're done. Did enough on that. Okay, Kyle, you want to do one more club one or you want to do a relationship thing? Just get ones over here.
Let's do a club one, yeah.
Yeah, post New Year's Eve. All right, 25, 6'5", 205, bench 285, squat 330. Stats are actually fairly relevant to the story. Although as a true gym bro, I wouldn't spare the chance to share them, even if they weren't. There you go. A few weeks ago, a group of buddies and I were out in the town getting after in a major market city that we all grew up in the vicinity of. We were having a great time. The bar was crowded, drinks were flowing, the vibes were high then, and what you will soon see turned out to be an all-time dumb decision. My friends and I decided to pivot to a place down the street, which was a bit more of a club-type atmosphere. Hey, you're 25, man. It happens. Wait until you're older, it happens. You're like, yeah, this is a great idea. Notice it. We pull into the place and the line to get in was nuts, like wrapped around the building, moving at absolute snail's pace. We quickly realized what a dumb decision it was to leave the previous bar. Not wanting to kill the momentum of the night, I decided to discreetly offer a group of four, two guys, two girls in the middle of the line, $50 to act like they knew us and let us cut them. It was only me and three of my friends, so it wasn't an obscene amount of people and nobody behind us in the line saw what happened or seemed to care. The one guy accepted my offer, but what I assumed was his girlfriend quickly became outraged at me as if I had done something wrong. She begins to taunt me, even though in reality, her boyfriend could have simply declined my offer and there would have been no issue. A few minutes go by, my friend lights a cigarette and lets me bum one. I don't smoke, but had a nice buzz going and was in the mood.
Hear ya.
Yeah, we don't need this, Kyle. All of a sudden, the girl who was just talking shit turns to me and goes, can I have a smoke? I look at her completely dumbfounded and say, no, why the fuck would I give you a smoke? And called her a few names along the way I won't repeat.
Right,
well. She then absolutely loses on me, proceeding to scream in my face for the next 20 minutes as the line is a complete standstill. I did not respond to a word she said, silently looking past her as her boyfriend, who was about a foot shorter than me, refused to back her up despite her frequent attempts to egg him into the situation. Finally, their group decides to exit the line and go somewhere else. I felt a sense of relief that me and my friends no longer had to deal with their antics. Then, as they're about 10 feet away, the boyfriend, who was too much of a weenie to say anything to my face, begins to run his mouth from a safe distance. Yeah. I approached them, not really with the intention of doing anything, but more as an intimidation ploy. The girl protects her boyfriend like a mama bear protecting the cub, then smacks me in the face. Her ring cut my lip, and I immediately had blood dripping down my chin. The girl and her boyfriend ran off, and I had to deal with the repercussions from my friends about getting rocked by this girl in front of a huge line of people. Every time I see my group now, I'm constantly reminded and shamed about what happened. They act like I should have done something. Clearly, the girl's off limits, but should I have chased this guy down and at the very least given him a scare? I know that drunk fights are never worth the potential outcome. However, this is an extreme case where I should have done something to protect my pride. I think you should be happy this didn't end up way worse. I mean, this is your fault. A lot of this stuff is always our fault, but you decide to talk to strangers about cutting a line, and the person that it would accept the $50, you know, like what kind of agreement are you entering with them there? Then you tell her off because she told you off. And so now you're just arguing with a stranger.
Now you're stuck next to this person?
Yeah.
And everyone moves over 2 feet.
Right. And now we could sit here for 30 minutes and hate each other's guts after I just gave you a 50.
That's where
the cigarette. Then it's going to be like, oh, wait, now can I have a cigarette? And then she's going to tell you off for 20 minutes. And then clearly the guy was never going to do anything until it felt like he didn't have to worry about it. And then what are you supposed to do? Beat him up? I mean, honestly, you're lucky this only ended with you with a cut lip, because clearly she was an absolute wild card. She, you know, I don't know what you said to her too, but I think you guys entered an agreement with each other under pretty shady circumstances. And the fact that it didn't go smoothly, but like, what are your boys going to do? Like, what are they going to say? Like, this could have gone so much worse, right? You could have beat up the guy. Then you could have a lawsuit. You could have gotten arrested, right?
Bouncers could have yoked you up. Yeah.
Right. She could have kept punching the shit out of you and then yelled to the bouncers that you put your hands on her. And then the bouncers are fucking you up, right? So honestly, this could have gone way worse. It didn't. Dudes give each other a hard time. That's part of it. It's a funny story. You'll laugh about it a lot more, you know, removed
later.
A few more weeks. We can laugh about it now. Yeah. Like I don't think this is really that big of a deal. You shouldn't beat yourself up about it because a girl just beat you up. But, you know, you'll be fine, dude. You'll be fine. You'll get through this.
Yeah. I one of my rules I try to follow is like, you know, I just try not to call women names, especially drunk women, because drunk women may punch you or smack you in the face. And then, you know, the rules that we've all kind of agreed to generally don't hit women, and you're not supposed to hit people. So I generally don't call people names. I try not to call women names, especially not drunk women. That's a good rule to follow. I can't say that I may have said no to the cigarette, but I would have been no because you're a beep, beep, beep. I wouldn't have like thrown a bunch of things, especially because of what we said earlier, you're in a line and now you're all like, now we'll just be quiet for 20 minutes? Probably not. That's probably not going to happen. You should have kind of looked at this red flag woman right there and been like, let me not do anything to, if you were going to like walk down the street and you know, that's a different thing. But to be standing in a line next to each other for however long it takes, that was just a poor planning decision by you. And then the last thing I'll say is my buddy got tackled by a woman in college and we loved it. He got tackled at a house party by a woman. I think she was on the rugby team, women's rugby. And like, that's not going to go away. It still gets brought up every once in a while. Each of us kind of has one thing that we're like, hey, remember when this happened? For this guy, it's getting tackled by a woman. And this might be your thing for a while. And that's okay because, you know, nothing, you didn't make a bad decision and do something horrible after the fact. It's just one of those funny things. So you got yourself a story. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think if, as far as like this guy was talking about, you know, curating the vibes and like offering $50, trying to keep the night going, I would have made better decisions in the line once you got there. For a guy who cares about the vibes, you did some things to set it in motion that the vibes took a turn. So just be more careful out there.
Okay, that's life advice. Thanks to Kyle. Thanks to everyone listening. Ryan Russell Podcast, Ryan Spotify.